I guess it was the Denny Smith campaign. And I said, who needs this? And I decided I wasn't going to do political consulting any longer. Mm-hmm. And I applied for a real job. Mm-hmm. And I was more than qualified for it. And it was a state parks PR person, and I thought that'd be kind of fun. It turns mm-hmm. out the state parks was just riddled with all sorts of problems, and it was good that I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. But Pat Amadeo's former secretary was the secretary to the director at that point. Mm-hmm. And I said, is this one of those jobs that you have to call the second floor corner office about? She said, quote, not this one, unquote. Meaning a lot of others they had to call and get approval, mm-hmm. just like Leo Hagstrom yeah. thought he had yeah. to do on something like that. Yeah. And you know, I wasn't even considered. You know, I was on some sort of a blacklist. There is in the Goldschmidt stuff in the archives a memo from Fred Miller mm-hmm. saying he had, quote, taken care of the Miles problem in economic development. It was my wife had gotten fired. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was just we don't want Denny Miles' wife working in state government under Neil Goldschmidt. Mm-hmm. All right, well again. There are people who look at this. This is your job. But the average citizen out there doesn't know that it's right. totally different now. And they think that this is the new normal, and maybe it is, but they don't realize. And people, I guess what I'm advocating for here, Jim, is as you're writing your book, you are writing for an audience that doesn't understand the frame of reference.
Right.
And that some things that you and I might know or understand, they're not going to know and understand. And I'm sure you already are finding yourself writing, and your editor will probably start taking it out. You're finding yourself writing, you know, unlike today, or unlike most situations, or, mm-hmm. you know, it was different back then. Mm-hmm. And people did this. I mean, the fact that everybody in the office smoked would be just, you know, amazing mm-hmm. to people today, and would probably be looked upon as being very negative. Well, it was pretty negative, but it was common. It was yeah. the way things were. People. Senators would hold their cigarette outside the bar because you couldn't smoke inside the bar, but you had to be inside the bar in order to vote.
Right.
So the cigarette was out here, and then it would very quickly go around when they went back to the side aisle so they mm-hmm. could smoke. I mean, that was common practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really important aspect of what you're doing is yeah. that people will not have a sufficient frame of reference and understand how different things were, that getting out of your sleek black Buick Skylark and stopping at a wait station to get to a public phone so that you could return the call of a reporter who really wanted to talk to you,
mm-hmm.
just it's not in people's minds at this point.
No.
They don't understand that's an extraordinary kind of action.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, what do you want to talk about besides all this stuff that I've been going on mm-hmm. and on and on about?
So, as a biographer, I have...
This is a memo that I wrote to the governor.
Uh-huh.
Dated,
good.
But he didn't do it. He didn't reach it.
Didn't reach it.
Yeah. Didn't get that record, so. Okay, as a biographer.
As a biographer, coming at this because the governor basically liked the way that I kind of called it, like I saw it, and you have a broad knowledge of things.
Yes.
I find myself...
Have you read the Straub book?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I would assume that because anybody who reads it is gonna yeah. recycle the damn book. So
yeah, yeah. No,
we don't want that.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, we're not doing that at all.
Right.
In fact, I've been reading a lot of OSU Press things, and so you're talking about the editor, what the editors can do. They have a really light editorial touch.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so I've got a system with readers and things like that that becomes even more important.
Okay.
Because of that.
Well,
but
and just real quickly,
yeah,
30 seconds. Obviously, we are committed to that independence, incredible
mm-hmm.
independence. And by its very nature, one makes judgments in doing a biography, and however mm-hmm. that comes out, it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jerry and I both reserve the right to say Jim missed it on this one mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. and you would understand that too,
mm-hmm.
and have a friendly and positive disagreement on something mm-hmm. like that. But if you... wanted, I don't know, quiet, off the record, whatever, you know, I've got 15 pages or 20 pages or whatever, and while I've got really good sources on this, read this and just tell me what you think. I don't promise to change a period or a comma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm open to that.
You could, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So anyway.
And talking to Jerry, she is, the only thing that I'm going to have Jerry really look at, I'm not sure, I mean, just give her the whole thing, but the Rashishi thing. Because right. that's going to be the thing that.
What kind of a timeline do you have on this whole thing?
Oh, I mean, whatever timeline I want. Okay. I want to have it done next year.
Okay. Okay. That seems reasonable.
But I'm not going to talk to the OSU editors until I'm ready to go because I have one day a week to work on this. If you give me a deadline, I won't make it. It's just that simple.
Okay. Then so I'm interrupting you, and I apologize. I am very unhappy with, and this can go on the tape as far as I'm concerned. I'm very unhappy with the development efforts of Pacific University.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I have the capacity of writing a $1,000 check every year if I wanted to, mm-hmm. and thanks to PERS and mm-hmm. my incredible hard work in state government and, mm-hmm. and at Oregon State, and I'm not even talked to. I mean, ever since Kelly left, they're not raising mm-hmm. any money, I don't think, for the ATIA project. And so, you know, do we have the funds available, or do I need to lean on the provost and the president to get the damn development people off of their butts and bring in more money, because they're raising money for, you know, three different pots, basically.
Right. The book is funded. It's fine.
Okay.
We've got two other pots. One of them is going along according to projections, and then we want to do fellowships. That's where we need work.
Okay.
And the newsletter that you didn't get in Christmas time, which just stuns me, but that brought in money for those pots.
Okay.
We're not even at the book is fine.
Okay. Are we gonna be able to do a run of hardcover books as well as the standard OSU Press format?
We haven't gotten that far. We're hoping that's we'll talk to OSU about that.
And are we gonna have enough funds, whether it's hardback or softback or whatever, to provide to the libraries around the state?
That I don't know. That the main expense on funds is a little bit for me, but I hired a research assistant,
right,
who I'm paying real money,
okay,
for, and so he's that, and I think we're going to be fine. I know with the Straub book, they actually got a grant that paid for putting them in all the libraries.
Okay.
And so we'll see when we get to that.
And don't forget, and you know this, but don't forget that you're going to have to take some time, or they're going to have to give you some time or pay you to do,
right,
to get around and promote this book. Books don't sell themselves.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You and know, I'm going to have to go out to...
You're going to have to make speeches.
Hang out with the Eamon Bundy lawyers and trade anecdotes.
Yes.
You know, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, now back to the point.
So as a biographer, so here's what I find myself doing is I do first is the energy thing. I know energy. I've consulted the BPA. But now I really know energy. And so my question, because you worked with ATIA in the legislature, you're there for the last couple of years. He's an established force at that point. He's run for governor. He's already planned on running for governor. I don't know if that was explicit to you or not, but he had already made that decision in about 75, 76.
Right.
Not big, but he had talked to Al. You know, Thompson and, yeah. and other people saying, if I do this, you know, that had already taken place. But he then becomes governor, and being governor is a very different thing than being in the legislature. Mm-hmm. How did he learn new stuff? How did he learn? I mean, he comes in with tax expertise, he comes up with a lot of pieces, but all of a sudden he has to do like I did. He's got to learn energy from the ground up. How did he do that?
Good question. Well, first of all, by being a legislator and by being diligent
mm-hmm.
as a legislator, I mean, a lot of legislators only come to the floor for the vote and or for a call of the House or a call of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
They spend most of their time schmoozing or eating or in their office, or they're not mm-hmm. that diligent, frankly.
Right.
They don't work that hard.
Right.
I mean, I learned very quickly in 77 that you had more respect for Ted Halleck than, I won't mention the name, of somebody who maybe you agreed with a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't agree with anything that Ted Halleck said, but he was right. just one hell of a hard-working state senator.
Yeah.
And incredibly bright, and I love outspoken. And he was there. He was working. He wasn't screwing around.
Yeah.
And so if you're there... That's just a whole, for 20 years you're there,
mm-hmm.
and you're there for all the floor debates, not just the committees you happen to be on, and that's a wonderful list you have of all the committees that he served on during that time, but if you actually attend, and in 77, he didn't miss, I mean, you look at the roll call, and mm-hmm. he was there,
mm-hmm.
and And you knew where to find him. You know, mm-hmm. he was in Senate room, whatever kind of thing, because he was the Revenue Committee was meeting, and or Trade and Economic Development was meeting. And so he.
Wally Carson's description of the 7 and 6 person is, and his wife was there when I interviewed Wally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't have any time to ourselves at all.
Right.
Because Bo put us on everything.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, yeah.
Was part of,
cover
part,
all that.
Part of the deal.
Yeah.
Part of the deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that I think he already had a lot of that. So let me put something out there that he and he you know introduced more human resources bills I guess than anybody else, and so you know he was deeply involved in something like that. But let me just talk about two examples that hopefully will illustrate and address your question. One of the things that I came in with in 77 was some research that had been done at OSU on returnable plastic milk containers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of my, beyond sending out press releases and helping other caucus members with communication, I mean, well, you know, first of all, Bob Smith didn't even talk to me. And George Wingard was kind of his own aloof self and so on. And Jernstedt didn't need anybody. Mm-hmm. And Wally didn't need anybody. I mean, so I didn't have a lot of work to do for others. Mm-hmm. But so I came in, and it was my job basically then to shepherd that process. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how it worked, but I learned about legislative council and all this kind of stuff. But then it was my job to explain all this really complex research that I had access to at Oregon State, how these plastic materials absorb urine and petrochemicals, and you never know how they were used, and that then transferred back into the milk and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it just boiled down to, number one, he was interested in Oregonians and the safety of Oregonians. This was not just a ruse to hurt the dairy industry.
Mm-hmm.
This, in fact, was something that was, in fact, a real public health issue. And he's just a bright guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I would hesitate to use the word naive when I get back to he was just so trusting of others that became a problem. But if he trusted you and you were looking out for his best interests, he was a very quick study on things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with regard to nuclear power, which he couldn't pronounce, but he he ended up understanding.
Yeah.
And we, at that time, you know, Trojan was a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we had these regular drills down in Room 50. Did he tell you the story about our first drill in Room 50?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Room 50 is now completely different, but the emergency services office was just next to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's now being used as a press room. And you had all these plywood things, and you opened them up, and there were phones labeled state police, emergency services, you know, and everybody. And so the whole idea of this, and you dragged out these big long cords, and you put them on your table, and you have a name tag. And so, you know, you had all of the important people for any kind of a disaster would have the telephones. So we got there, and the state police phone number had been switched over, and it was the guest services up at the Capitol Guides office. I mean, literally half of the numbers had completely changed. They just hadn't bothered to do it. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting PR issue because, you know, we had to explain that this evidently had not been, and it was for a Trojan kind of practice drill. That's when General Miller, who came up in one of your earlier Rajneesh stories, he came up to me, and, you know, he's a kind of a stocky guy and really old style. And he got in trouble. He brought in booze from Reno on National Guard helicopters and things like that. We had to shut him down on a couple of occasions. But he came over and he grabbed my arm and he said, "If there's a fight, I'm on his side." He's just, and also when I called him up and said, you know, General Tom McCall is dying and I've been asked to coordinate with the military even though I'm working on the campaign right now. And it was a pause and he said, "Standing tall, sir." I mean, I guess maybe I could have done well in the military. I like that kind of, but yeah. So he learned about that. He could explain to you to the day he died how a nuclear plant runs and what can go wrong with it and why that's important and why a wind direction has to be given consistently the same way and you have to add the word from to the wind direction so that people don't get it 180 degrees out of phase kind of thing. So he understood by being briefed on it and by understanding it and by going through the drills himself. And I don't think any other governor would actually physically go through the drills themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the NRC people, you have to have a failure. You have to have a plume.
yeah.
if you're going to have a drill.
Yeah.
But the PGE people were so smart that they could stop anything. So they said, well, you just lost your pump on mm-hmm. the cooling system. Okay, well, we have a backup pump. Okay, do you want to take time to get that all started up, or do you want to know that you're going to lose that one too, and we might as well just lose it now? And they go, okay, well, we solved that problem because we got a fire truck, and the fire truck has got a coupling on it that'll couple to that, and we can pull water out of the Columbia River mm-hmm. and backfill it. Damn it, your fire truck just broke too, you know, kind of thing.
There's a nice flow. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
So anyway, he just was smart enough and bright enough and had been through enough legislative experience that it was of interest to him
mm-hmm.
that's the case. Now, did he rely on Pat for natural resources information and stuff? Absolutely. Did he rely on Bob Oliver did he rely on his staff for to do the homework and stuff? But mostly he relied on them to bring both sides of the story to his desk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's the strong argument for this, but here's the strong argument for the other side of that. Here's where I think you ought to come down because that's where you are on it.
Mm-hmm.
That would always be a part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that addresses...
Yeah. So was he someone who took briefing books home? I mean, he works long hours, really long hours.
And his desk is always clean at the end of the day.
I know.
Always.
Did he have a personal life? I mean, is he just immersing himself in this stuff? Or is he... You know, 20 years of being really involved in legislature, he's prepped. But there's going to be things that, you know, he just doesn't know.
I can't think of an example where that surfaced.
Okay.
Where he was clueless about a specific issue.
Yeah.
Now, mistakenly overly loyal,
all
the time.
Yeah.
But not really understanding a technical issue,
mm-hmm.
whether it be in agriculture or whether it be in forestry or whatever. I mean, he's the guy who told the timber industry, much to their chagrin, that they should be marketing Oregon 2x4s
mm-hmm.
because we had better quality wood than other places, and we ought to be stamping it, and they ought to tax themselves to do that. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. But, you know, I mean, he was smart enough in his business dealings that he knew what he was doing with regard to marketing and things like that. And sitting in the cabinet meetings was the best way to know what's going on in state government and know what's happening. Some of them were just bring and brag sessions where people came in and took credit for good things that were going to happen anyway. The sun came up this morning. It's all my doing.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it was really stuff that he could burrow in on them. Sitting in on the budget meetings himself and querying people on it. He already knew a lot, but he learned a whole lot more by actually sitting, because I don't believe he was ever on Ways and Means, was he?
No. He's always on the tax side.
Yeah.
And does some really cool stuff. 1961 session, he's the head of the food or the dairy. And there are price controls on dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, they had to put price controls on gas. And so I got a great quote from him and said, well, we let the cow out of the barn. So I guess we've got to put price controls on gas, too.
By the way, the milk bottle bill didn't pass.
It
ran into Bill Markham.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
who explains to me on a regular basis that he's really sorry about that, but he had a lot of cows and a lot of dairy people, but they also stopped using returnable plastic milk jugs, too. So it effectively was taken care of because they knew it was going to come back.
Right.
And it also got some news articles that said Vic Atiyah, not thought of as an environmentalist, is, you know, and certainly a big supporter of the dairy industry, but he felt that this was a public safety issue, and so he got some good press out of it.
That's kind of a recurring theme, especially people who ended up working really close with him. He just surprised people because there was a side to him that you just didn't know. And it's part of the problem that you had with him all the time. He wouldn't toot his horn.
Right.
He just was who he was. But, you know, Roy Hemingway's classic example. I mean, he thought he was going to be fired because the commissioner had been fired.
Right.
And he goes in, and not only is he asked to stay, he's encouraged to do this, that, and the other. And when he and other people say, you know, the fish are a really important part of this, he was terrified that this guy, who he lobbied against in the legislature, And Vic looked at it and said, that's the most reasonable thing in the world. Of course we're going to do that. So it's just, he was just always doing that.
Right. Yeah, and partisanship really did not, I mean, he was a partisan. He certainly was. He wanted to elect Republicans. That's what it was all about.
Yeah.
But when it came to running state government, it was the best person for the job. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of the people he appointed, you know, did much better when the Democrats got in charge.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Miller included, who we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
They were more natural people there. But he, you know, again, just a very bright guy, and whatever was practical, whatever was going to work was mm-hmm. what he wanted to have happen.
Yeah.
You know, everybody says he was the right person for the, at the right time because of the financial crisis and all the budgets and things like that. The what if the counterfactual history book that would be fun to write would mm-hmm. be we didn't have a national recession.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at 79 and you look at all the energy stuff that he was doing and okay, if he, that would have all been done by 81.
Mm-hmm.
And there would have been, and if the economy were roaring, what other kinds of incredible things could we have done if we weren't busy just keeping the ship upright?
Yeah.
And
the thing is, because of the dominance of energy and then how quickly the economy took that over.
Right.
There's no articulation from him about grand plans or ideas. And he didn't, often would he wouldn't have those. He'd go in and say, well, I have an idea. We want to make it better for business, so we want to do this out of the other. We want to make it better for the economy to do this out of the other. But, you know, what would have happened?
But so remember, I'm trying to think, when he became a member of the legislature,
mm-hmm.
who was governor?
The brand new McCall. Or brand new Hatfield.
Okay. Because he didn't serve in the legislature with Mark Hatfield then.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, again, an incredibly bright guy, Mark Hatfield, mm-hmm. and all. So he had Hatfield, McCall, Straub, and so on. Big idea people, mostly.
Yeah.
Government.
Especially McCall and Straub.
Right.
Yeah.
But in terms of the big picture and the, you know, the legacy builders, the people mm-hmm. who are hoping to be remembered by history as the big mm-hmm. big legacy, there will be these five things that, you know, saving the beaches and land use planning and all this kind of stuff. And McCall just stole ideas, as you know. I mean, I don't think there is an original idea that came out that he didn't just pick up from somebody else and realize that it was a good idea.
And sometimes it took him 18 months to figure out it was a good idea.
Sometimes he was opposed to it.
Yeah, exactly.
He was against it, for God's sake.
Exactly.
And the governor tells the story about riding back with him to Washington, D.C. to talk about LCDC, and he didn't even understand it, let alone. So anyway, but the point is that I think that Victor Atiyah looked at the job of governor as being less of the big picture, grandiose, mm-hmm. splash, legacy kind of thing than it was running the biggest and most important corporation in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that he can be accused of getting too deep in the weeds of the minutiae of running state government,
mm-hmm.
but he knew what was going on and what had to be done, and he would still have the people implemented. He would hire good people, let them do their job until it became known to him that they weren't doing their job,
right.
Which didn't happen that often. And so I think he just knew what was going on, and mm-hmm. he had that information, and he did not want to be a Hatfield. He did not want to be a McCall,
mm-hmm.
did not want to be a Straub.
Mm-hmm.
His vision of being governor was not having, and ironically, what it has created is this incredible legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this, I don't want to butter you up here, all right? But the fact is that this book is going to be, with the possible exception of Floyd McKay's Sprague mm-hmm. biography, I mean, it's going to be one of the few real biographies of an Oregon leader rather than a self-written, you know, all of the books that Mark Hatfield did Rock on the Rim Rock or Ranch on the Rim Rock
mm-hmm.
and even Brent Wolff's book, which was an attempt at doing a real mm-hmm. definitive and did a pretty good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, ironically, he was not looking for a legacy, and the book and the archive and what he actually got done under difficult circumstances is going to be an incredible legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's almost like if he'd been striving for that, he wouldn't have got it.
Right.
And Straub kind of strove for that and didn't get it. McCall got it in really a backward sort of way in
many
ways.
It's like we live in PR terms, we live in Tom McCall's state, but we don't. We live in Vicatia's state.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And and Mark Hatfield was really just doing it, getting ready to be a United States Senator.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very simply. I mean, that was his plan from the graduate school days in Palo Alto. So, all right. Anyway, if that answers your question, I don't want to take rambling
great.
Here.
That's great.
Okay.
That's good. Something came to mind, but I couldn't remember what it was.
Well, I got a phone.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember what it was.
Well, I will say to you what I've said to you before, and that is, while they may be telling you about what an appropriate length is...
No, this is... I'm 30% done, and I've written 340 pages.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You're following the advice of writing long okay.
Yeah. And you know, whatever happens with OSU Press, and Isaac and Marita talk to OSU Press.
You don't have to worry about it.
I'm not going to deal with them directly, and because I can't do a deadline.
Right.
It just isn't going to happen. And so
well, early on in this process, I did talk to them. And their acquisitions director, or whatever her title was, at a coffee shop in Corvallis, and I talked to the one in Bend and some of the much more just private publishers rather than real publishers kind of thing. And obviously, they are incredibly eager about this project.
Oh yeah,
they were 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, and they I mean, because my readers beyond my wife and the guy I'm paying. The librarians are getting what I have, and so they're excited.
Good.
Too. They're very excited, especially Marita.
Their process, well, she's a princess.
Yeah.
Their process then was that they would get I don't know if it's draft or first run or whatever, and so on and so forth, and they would send it out to three unnamed people.
Yeah.
Who would read it and comment on it and so on and so forth, and I thought. I won't tell you exactly the words that went through my mind, but they were not positive words. And I thought to myself, well, if they're on this campus, either retired or not retired, I mean, I have no idea where you are politically, but I do know where Bill Lunch is, and I do know where some of the other people on that campus are. I mean, they're Marxists, basically.
Yeah. And it'll be fascinating to see what they say, and also then what that process is like in terms of me saying, you know, they can go take a flying leap.
Well,
I encountered this.
We don't have a contract with them, right?
Oh no.
Yeah,
no,
okay.
No. But I told you when I wrote the Oregon Encyclopedia on Vic, which was done before he died, and then we put on the death date afterwards. One of the anonymous comments that came back was about the unitary tax really cost the school system. You know, it was a really negative thing. And the editor asked about that, and I said, well, from the work that I've done so far, and you have to realize that my sabbatical is coming up. I have not dived deep into this. At worst, a wash, and it most likely didn't make any difference at all. But that's the narrative.
Right.
And so nothing was changed. And it's just a couple of words, because
they
gave me 500, and I went to 750.
Right.
Woo-hoo.
Right. Unfortunately, but very few people know about that website. It's a wonderful website.
Oh, yeah. I use it all the time for this kind of stuff. And it's also amazing what's not on there, because it's their own fads.
Right.
But that's fine. But that kind of stuff, you know, I said, you know, until I get done with the book, I can't give you a strong answer. Well, I've read the Unitary. That's the first chapter I wrote. It's also the shortest chapter.
Right.
And if there was anything within a year, it was more than made up.
Right.
More than made up.
Right.
It was just a total red herring. But when you send it out to the anonymous readers, they remember. So I will be fascinated to see what the anonymous readers say. And I may actually sit down with Les Zeitz up beforehand and just talk to him about all this stuff. Because the Rajishi things, I've got to be the one that gets it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been talking with Ava. I think Jerry's going to give me a ton of stuff. I have a ton of it already, but will she allow us to scan it here? And I've talked with Ava. There are things that we may want to put our own embargo on in information, just in terms of legal things, but also just things. For instance, Jerry talks very openly about Al's ex-wife.
Mm. Well, and Bob Oliver on the Dwayne Samples thing dated Dwayne Samples' ex-wife.
That.
Yeah,
that's
there's
great.
There's a memo in Jerry's binder that she's going to give you that basically from Bob to the governor that says, you know, I supposedly was introduced by Ron Schmidt to this gal who worked in Pio Schmidt Westerdahl, and I had no idea of her connection with this, that, or something else. I mean, it's a bit of a CYA memo, but it's a legitimate thing. Covering your ass is not a bad thing to do with the governor to make sure he's aware of it. There's another great memo, speaking of Pacific University and things like that in there, and hopefully now Jerry doesn't take her black marker through that one by taking it out of the binder, but there's this memo about, quote, Paul Phillips had a bad day. And he had a bicyclist run into him, and then he gave his business card to the bicyclist, and that was not, we weren't supposed to do that on private matters, and I mean, it was not a rule, but it was just like, you know, you don't use the governor's office to influence things.
Yeah.
And then he walked out of a restaurant without paying, totally, and all on the same day,
It's great.
So then he wanted to run for the legislature and stay in the governor's office.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to resign from the governor's office just to run the campaign, let alone,
you know. You can't do that.
No.
Yeah.
So, when the
book goes out to the anonymous reviewers, they're going to remember their own Rajneeshi experience.
And their own milieu. And
And this ain't it.
Right.
This has never been told.
Right.
And so it's just going to be fascinating to see what those, how that comes
and,
together.
And I think, officially, it is the unitary method of taxation, not the unitary tax, although everybody knew it as the unitary tax.
And that's, that's in there. One thing that, when you were talking about context and the milieu and that kind of thing, the people who read it, like Ava came up and said, I never really understood how the property tax and the sales tax and all that. And I said, yeah, well, there you go. And the fun thing is, Oregon was the first place to have this kind of tax and that kind of tax.
Right,
and yet it was called the sales tax. The gasoline tax was specifically called the sales tax up until the 1950s.
Right.
And then we stopped using those words. We don't have a sales tax. And we do.
So by the way, I guess it would be, from a political side of things, and talking about the business community, I think you have to say that supporting the sales tax was also a mistake, but it might have been a mistake that needed to be made. I don't know. I mean, it was like everybody, I guess, has to at one point or another try to pass the sales tax. That seems to be
the thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know the history of the legislature in the 1960s?
Probably not.
Everybody and their mother had a sales tax proposal.
Is that right?
Yeah. This is how Bob Oliver cut his teeth. He was hired right when Vic came. He was hired. This is his first job.
Yeah.
So he knew Vic from day one.
Yeah.
But he said, especially from about 61 to about 67, he was just busy all the time with, 67, because he goes to work for McCall then. Everybody had a sales tax plan.
Yeah.
And Vic was there all the time, because Vic, in his way, he didn't want a sales tax, but by God, he had to understand it.
Right.
In order to cast a principled vote against it.
And I think...
It's just incredible.
I think he was talked into changing his position and supporting the sales tax by leaders within the business community.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure. There's also the competition with the OEA.
Right.
A lot of negotiations going back and forth there. I have it in that chapter. Vic eventually blames Danielson for the collapse of the whole thing.
Right.
But this is, I actually did this on K2 with the legislative leaders because of the big tax that's coming up. It's exactly what Vic proposed when he won in 1982.
Really?
To a T. Hmm. His would have raised $1.5 billion biennium in today's dollars.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking $5 billion. So it's bigger, but it's in the same ballpark.
Hmm.
And you could just see when I said that, Mike McLean, I can't remember who the other guy was, their eyes just kind of like, huh? It's like, you know, different time, but this is not a wacky, weird idea.
Right.
And lo and behold, it's exactly what Hatfield proposed.
Exactly. Well, you've heard the quote from the boss. There's really very few new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're
yeah, this whole thing on taxes as well. There's only about five ways to do it. There you go.
Right. And you can then just figure out what the decimal multiplier is going to be.
Yeah.
And there is no such thing as a fair tax and all those kind of things. I think you've got this, but his ongoing opposition until he flipped was that the biggest problem with the sales tax was it was insidious.
Yeah, he called it a hidden tax.
Right.
Which is bullshit, but that's what he thought.
What do you really think, Jim?
No. It's very. My wife read that and she said, it makes perfect sense why he would think that, but how can he think that?
Hmm.
And his whole point was that at the end of a year, you have an idea, you know what your income tax is, but you never know what your sales tax is.
Right.
Whereas psychologically, it's exactly the reverse. When you pay a sales tax, you always know it, but you don't know the accumulative effect, which is his argument. And so it's just a fascinating thing, but it's it drove him to eventually, and there's no evidence about why he flipped.
I think he just went through enough badgering.
Very easily could be it.
Business community, screw it.
Because there's a lot of pressure.
I'm not going to run for office ever again.
Right.
If I'm ever going to do it, I might as well do it now.
Yeah.
And then I've said Paul Newman is a genius. Did you ever talk to Paul?
No, I'm not at the stage to talk to him yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, Paul Newman's a genius, but the comic book was just...
Yeah.
And I was not involved in that campaign.
I think that in the chapter is a single line.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was a comic book.
Right.
And there'll be a picture of it right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're hard to find.
Yeah.
The other bit of political memorabilia that's hard to find is a... Charlie Thone, when he was running, who was a kind of an analog to Vicatia, but he mm-hmm. was in Nebraska, mm-hmm. and when he was running against Rockin' Bob Kerrey for governor, mm-hmm. He had a brochure, and Paul Newman was one of his consultants, mm-hmm. and he had and you've seen the Capitol in Lincoln, Nebraska, mm-hmm. right? It's called the Prick of the Prairie.
Yeah.
It's got this wonderful dome up here with the seed sower at the top. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. What were they thinking? Was some architect laughing away or whatever?
Yeah.
But he had a brochure that when you opened it up, the Capitol tower rose up like this.
That's great.
It was a dynamic brochure. And if you held it, you know, it rose up normally, but if you held it upside down, it kind of came up and did this, you know, kind of thing. I go, okay. And it is an incredible collector's item. I mean, it's the 1909 SVDB of political collections.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing.
That's great.
So,
that's great.
Yeah, the sales tax just seemed... I guess I'm going to disagree with you because, yes, you know about it, but if you took... a sterile straight pin, and you went, mm-hmm. you'd know that you'd been stuck by a pin. It would hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But if you combined daily stick pin mm-hmm. things and put it all into one stabbing,
mm-hmm.
it would hurt more.
It would hurt more.
You'd be aware of it more than you would be. Yes, you'd be aware of each of those little things, but we are only aware of it because when we go to Washington, we pay it, and it's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
And so, whoa, I forgot. Damn, it's the sales tax.
What I ended up doing is, because he was coming of age and taking over the business, as the income tax switched to being an annual payment.
Right.
And the reason they did it as an annual payment is they said, we'll do withdrawals from people's income, and so they won't scream as much.
I don't understand. What was it before then?
It's quarterly, and you didn't pay it the year. You paid it the next year. You paid your quarterly
in advance.
No, you paid it in post. So 1938, you pay your 38 taxes in quarterly payments.
So the personal income tax was like Miles and Associates income taxes. You paid estimated, the businesses
paid. You didn't, no, not even estimated. You were paying last year's income taxes this year.
Whoa, what a deal.
And so the biggest, when they actually flipped it, which is 43-44, the biggest negotiation was, what do we do with the year we're going to miss?
Yeah.
And we're fighting a war, so income tax was, I have the numbers in here, but it was like $2 billion to like $85 billion in 2 years because of the war effort.
Wow.
And so, what do we do? But young Vicatia is taking over the business, so he's seen this from a business side as well as his own income side. So he's seen the greatest switch from hidden tax to open tax or whatever it is.
Right, right.
It's happened. So what I think is he's looking at this as a business owner.
You realize you get 10 books out of all
this. Oh, yeah. That's great stuff.
Any one of these topics you could write an entire book on.
No, it's great stuff. And things that, you know, it's like Earl Snell. People just have no idea. They have no idea in the world.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating. So one last anecdote. I'll turn this off once we're done.
He did tell you, this is not anything, but... But that, in speaking of his business, Acume, that you